All right, hello, Gold members. It's Kit Grant again, and my guest this month is Jim Clemmer, a well-known author and expert in the areas of corporate and leadership performance. Some of you may recognize him from his best-selling book, Growing the Distance, which could be, in fact, probably should be, everyone's roadmap for personal, career, and family success. So welcome, Jim.
All right, great to be here.
What we usually like to do is have you start off and tell our members a little bit about your business. So I'll turn it over to you.
Well, this is my second consulting training business. My first one was called the Achieve Group, which we developed throughout the 90s, did a lot of work with Zenger Miller out of California. And so after a huge amount of market research, we decided to call this one the Clemmer Group.
Ooh, that's a clever name.
I know. It took a lot of work to come up with that. And the kind of work that we do is what I call practical leadership, but it's really... in the broad area, leadership is such a broad topic, and it's really dealing with organization improvement, teams, and some of the book you just mentioned, Growing the Distance, gets into some of the personal applications of leadership as well. But a lot of it really has to do with leading others and then essentially saying, well, in order to lead others effectively, I have to be a good leader of myself as well.
Right.
And how those marry together.
Okay. So taking that as a step into some of the work that you do with clients, then one of the things that I often hear from people is this ongoing confusion, if indeed it is that, what's the difference, how you see it, between management and leadership? What separates the two?
Yeah, I think there is sometimes some confusion, and it really doesn't need to be, I think, because they're very intertwined, and almost separating them is a little bit artificial, but I really think it is useful to do, though, and it's something I've done for many years, and I find that people find it useful to step back a little bit and say, okay, leadership is more about the heart. It's about how others connect. It's the emotional side of things. I like some of the more recent research on emotional intelligence, and because it overlays nicely on a lot of the leadership attributes, characteristics, etc. And management is more about the head. It's about planning and analysis and controls and systems and good thinking and rational analysis, etc. And you can err too far on either side of that equation. We all, I'm sure, know of and maybe even have to some extent experienced, for example, someone who's erred on the side of being too much leadership and not enough management, a startup sort of situation where the company's got lots of energy and passion and vision and everybody's excited right. And they've got huge plans and no business model or nothing
okay.
that, or no discipline or no real structure or process, and it's a classic entrepreneurial trap.
I was going to say, a trap for people to start their own business quite often.
Yeah, it is. And of course we saw the huge implosion from the dot-com years ago where that happened in spades. And then of course the more common one though is people who are on the other side of the equation who tend to really focus on a lot of management and analysis and planning and head MBA kind of stuff, mm-hmm. but use the leader speak language and use leadership. To me, one of the classic examples is, have you got a mission statement or have you got a set of values? Well,
right.
all kinds of organizations have done that. They've gone off to the retreat and they've got their values and they've got their mission statement, but it sounds like it was written by a committee of lawyers. And it really doesn't get you at the heart. It really doesn't kind of pull anybody in on the leadership side of the equation. It's purely, yeah, we could check that one off the list. Yeah, we got a statement here. Yeah, we got our values here. Yeah, and just kind of go down and check it off and see it as a management kind of activity rather than as a way of really engaging people.
Right. So I had somebody in a session say to me once that the mission statement was something that four guys came up with on a fishing trip. And it's on the wall, so now let's not worry.
Yeah.
Because that's been done.
Yeah, exactly.
Would it be fair, I know it's simplified to say, but would it be fair that management relates more to position power, leadership to personal power?
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I often, a phrase I use a lot is that leadership is an action, not a position.
Okay.
And so I think that's saying a similar kind
right.
of thing. And that a lot of people who are in roles where they've been given a responsibility get confused and think that they now are a leader when mm-hmm. in fact they might be a manager, a technician, a bureaucrat, or even a supervisor.
That's a good title.
A lot of those around.
That's a good title.
Yeah. But doesn't necessarily mean that they're providing good leadership.
Right. Because the reason I mention that is because sometimes you'll find in some organizations the person who's the leader is not the one with the title.
That's very true.
You know, not the management title,
at least. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's more about as you said, connecting rather than just being in a position.
And who gets things done, and who's right. making it happen, and yeah, who do people look to? That cliched sort of phrase, the go-to guy or the go-to girl,
but right.
who do people go to get things done?
Okay, now, in going through your books, and I did, and I'll mention the books later, one of the things I really liked, only because it ties in, primarily probably why I liked it, ties into some of the work that I do, is the whole concept of being responsible for the choices that you make once you're in that position. Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Responsibility?
Clearly the work that you do is brilliant. we agree with each other.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very fundamental principle, and it really comes back to the conversation we just had about leadership as an action, not a position, and it's taking responsibility and making something happen. I use a simple little model that I find really connects with people that basically says whenever stuff happens to us, stuff that we wouldn't necessarily like or embrace or want to have happen, we essentially have three choices, and we have to take responsibility for that choice. We can either be a victim, and we can fall into the poor me, or someone called it the Eeyore syndrome. Why me? Oh, here we go again. And I talk about pity city and getting caught up in pity city with pity parties and frown town, and there's all this right. negative energy. So it's human to do some of that, and we've all done some of that, especially if we're faced with some really tough stuff. So that's one response. Or another response is a little more in the neutral zone, which is, I call it survivor, but we just kind of wait and see, hanging in there, hoping things will get better, not really committing ourselves. And there's times when that's smart to do. An example might be when there's a new boss or a okay. new owner or a new government has just been elected, and to commit yourself right away and just jump right in and leap in and make right. things happen. Well, no, you got to get the lay of the land, got to make sure that we see where things are going here, or maybe we need to dig a little more and get a little more information before we come up with an action plan. So there's times when that's smart.
There's a fine line between that and hiding, though, isn't there?
Exactly. It's a neutral area, and it has a very fine line. Mm. And sometimes the way I distinguish it as well is it's a line between skepticism and cynicism.
Ah, okay.
And so it's easy to slip down.
Tougher to define, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then the third response for me is navigator. So and I think that's leadership territory, and that's exactly what we're talking about here, is that a navigator, just using that as the nautical sort of analogy, the navigator doesn't determine the wind and doesn't determine the ocean currents and lots of things out of his or her control, but they then decide how to respond. And they try to be proactive and saying, okay, I want to go over there, and I'm going to maybe have to tack this way and go that. I'm going to have to try, and if I get blown off course, I'm going to have to come back on, or I'm going to have to lower the sails for a while and wait out a storm. But it's constantly looking for ways to get around the situation or get their way through the situation, versus, at the other extreme, the victim that just kind of throws up their hands and says, why
it's
the hell
my
bother?
Fault anyway.
Yeah. And so that's the not taking responsibility for those choices and saying, it's out of my control, there's nothing I can do. In the book Growing the Distance, I put a lot of stories and examples. My favorite was of the 38-year-old that was home talking to his parents one day, and he said, I just come through my second job, my kids won't even talk to me, I think I'm going to have to declare personal bankruptcy, I lost my job again. Where did you go wrong? Right? Where did you, as my parents, go wrong? It's your fault that my life is so screwed up. And that, to me, is the classic. That's sort of an extreme, and we all kind of recognize, well, that's really silly and dumb, but
not nowadays.
Yeah. Well, and then we start looking in the mirror a little bit and saying, well, it's really easy to begin to say, well, she makes me mad, or he controls my attitude, or they decide whether my blood pressure is going to go up today or not. Mm-hmm. And so I don't take responsibility for the choices I'm making about the kind of attitude or mindset or perspective I'm bringing to the situation.
Okay, so the navigator does take responsibility then for the choices that are made.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So other than the popularity of victimhood, if you want, or the confusion, inability to identify that line between what you pointed out before for the second choice, why are more people not taking the navigator route? Why do they not follow that?
It's a lot harder. It's much easier to just point fingers and say it's somebody else's fault.
Okay.
I think that's it. There's a fair bit of research as well, because this really gets into the whole realm of field that I find really fascinating. I'm no psychologist, but the field of cognitive psychology, and which is really cognition has to do with how we explain things or look at things, the framework we bring. And it starts to get you into that sort of philosophical debate about what is reality and what is consciousness and all of that stuff. And when someone says, get real, you're not living in the real world, that's not reality. Well, what they're really saying is you're not looking at it the way I'm looking at it. This is the way you ought to look at it. Here's reality.
Well, my reality is the right one.
Yeah, that's right. And so there's your reality and there's my reality. There's somebody else's. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's so popular to be below the line, is because it's harder to do. And I would say as well, one of the little closed loops about victimness is that you're so maybe feeling of helpless and hopeless that you give up. And by giving up, nothing happens, or negative things happen, or more negative stuff happens, which just then reinforces. Yeah. See, I told you. I knew that crap was going to happen. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so why even bother?
It's also popular.
It's very, very popular, yeah.
I say, well, say to people sometimes, if you, not to sound too pessimistic, but if you're with the negative group, at least you're with the in-group.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah. Well, and the cognitive psychology research shows that it's up to 5 times harder to be positive in the face of negative events than it is to just go along with the negative crowd. It's a lot harder, and I think it takes a lot more courage, and I think it takes a navigator to say, well, I'm not going to go commiserate with them and have a pity party with them. I'm going to go and...
So you're not to be confused then with popularity, other than in the political sense, perhaps, but we talk about leadership.
Yeah.
But when you do things, you're not necessarily going to be popular anyway, are you?
No, I don't think so. I think that some of the strongest leaders are the leaders that are authentic, that are following their own drummer, that are clear about who they are and their values, and are standing tall for those.
Okay, because you had a whole section on authenticity, which I think is another important area of your model, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. To me, it has two elements. It has the inner dimension of authenticity. Am I being true to me? Am I being? Because it's so hard, I think, to really separate us, whether I'm living my true values or my parents or my spouses or in the institutions or whomever, my peer group. And are those truly the things I value? Are those truly the things I believe? Is this truly my path, or am I following somebody else's? I think that's really, really hard sometimes to make that distinction. So to me, that's part of authenticity, is that following of that inner path and that constant inner growth. To boldly grow where no one has grown before.
Ooh, there's one.
Yeah, there we go. That's a little dad joke that's called in our house.
Kaboom, but,
yeah, there we go. Yeah, the bada boom boom.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's the inner dimension of authenticity. The outer dimension, then, I think, is the consistency, or how we're seen by others to be truly walking the talk, to be leading by example. And on that one, I think a lot of times, leaders, whether it's a formal and informal role, can get tripped up into confusing their intentions with how somebody else is seeing their behavior. So because I intended to do this, or I had this intention in mind when I said what I said or did what I did, I believe I'm being authentic and true and real. But it may have come across very differently on the part of the receiver, or you as the observer.
Okay.
And you may be quick to say, what a hypocrite he is. Here he's saying he believes in whatever it is, customer service, or believes in some leadership attribute or value of some sort. And now I just saw them do something else that sounded like they didn't believe in it at all.
But if people bring that to your attention, if somebody's strong enough to confront you on that, wouldn't this create another inner conflict on the inner authenticity thing? You ask yourself continually, or is that a continuous process? You're always asking yourself.
I think you are, yeah. I know I certainly am. I continually, as I'm confronted with some of these things, or as our kids do something, or my spouse, or coworkers, or whatever, and it kind of comes back and says, gee, that wasn't quite the way I meant it. And then I say, well, now, was that my misbehaving, or was that their misunderstanding? Yeah, clearly.
It's their fault. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's that old adage that says children act like their parents despite all attempts to teach them good manners. And so whenever our kids are doing something, I think, where did you learn that? Well, it's clearly from your mother. Clearly.
Good. We've identified. We have now identified the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. And it is not me, contrary to popular belief.
But that's the responsibility for choices stuff. That's the hard stuff to kind of step up to and say, geez, maybe I've got a little part to play in this.
It can be, but I think there's also a problem with the inner authenticity thing in that many of us have been told that we're supposed to be there to please others.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're constantly pleasing others, how do we remain authentic to ourselves?
Well, I think that, yeah, I agree with you. And I think I would even add to that a degree that if to be effective in any kind of leadership role to influence people, we're taught, and I think good people who are good at this, try to understand the style of the other person, try to understand where they're coming from,
right,
and try to mold or shape their approach to fit that style or the needs, okay, or whatever the other person. And so in its extreme, that chameleon type of behavior can be exactly what you put your finger on. It can be very inauthentic in that I'm trying to look to you like something maybe that I'm not, because I think that's what you want to see. And that's how I think I'm going to try to connect with you and influence you. And yet, it's finding that line where, yeah, you say, okay, well, I'm going to behave in this way because it's your style. Let's say I'm dealing with somebody who's really, really analytical into numbers and all,
right,
that kind of thing. And I'm much more comfortable in the world of people and stories and so on. And so I take this highly analytical numbers kind of approach to connect with them. And if I'm not careful, I can start to get so deep down that path that I, too, totally forget the human element and the people element and start to almost become inauthentic to my true values about people. So what I've got to learn to do, I think, is figure out, well, how do I bridge the gap and connect with you around maybe leading with numbers and starting off in that way, and then using your style or approach, come back around to what I think the real core,
right,
issue is.
Because you're keeping the end goal in mind all the time.
Yeah.
Because the leader, what we call them, a leader or a coach, part of your job is to put the right people in the right position to produce the right result, is it not?
Absolutely, yeah.
So the concept I always talk about is, you know, treating people like individuals, which is a, you know, totally unique idea.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't do that because,
no,
as you indicated before, it requires thought and work.
Yeah.
It's much easier to just call them all clerk ones.
Right. Yeah, or to manage to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
And we've got a problem with one person, therefore we're going to put this rule in place to catch everybody.
More policies.
When it's just one person that we should really go deal with them,
yeah,
and not penalize everybody,
yeah,
else.
It's like leading to the point where what you really try to do is to avoid getting in trouble, as,
yeah,
opposed to making anything happen.
Yeah. Defensiveness. Yeah.
So the authenticity goes a lot deeper than the surface thing, and it brings up that whole concept you talked about before about taking responsibility. And I recall in your book of Firing on All Cylinders, the thing that I liked the content of the book as well too, but the title is really a catch. Because, I mean, how does anybody fire on all cylinders consistently?
Well, that's the goal. That's the vision.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what that book was trying to capture. It was actually built around a model for service and quality improvement,
right,
and organization effectiveness that said, here are the 12 main areas, in our opinion, these are the 12 main areas that need to be improved in order to move the organization forward. And so the goal is, it's like 12 cylinders, we got to get them all firing in the right sequence and firing effectively together,
okay,
in order to maximize the horsepower, maximize,
right,
the output of the organization. And so got to get the whole thing firing.
Which necessarily ties in with the other concepts of having a leader that can do that, make that happen. Because one of the complaints you hear all the time nowadays is, you know, if service is bad, it must be, quote unquote, management's fault. And so I'd ask you now, is the concept of service quality still even important?
Oh, I think it's, yeah, absolutely critical. And I think that, like so many things, things fall in and out of favor, and,
right,
and various labels get used that are a fad for a while. But consistently, the research continues to show that high service quality organizations still command higher margins, still command higher retention of customers, higher retention of employees, higher sales, higher profitability. Almost every measure that you want to use, high service quality performers are the leaders.
Right.